I love my 3 a.m. 3 mile walk around the campus every day. I climb up the hills at sunrise. My day begins with the perspective of beginning my day embraced in the bright sky. This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with the thought for today. I love my 3 a.m. 3 mile walk in the morning around the campus every day. I climb up the hills at sunrise. My day begins with the perspective of beginning my day embraced in the bright sky. If everyone could have this experience, I would just be so happy, because it delights me no end as I walk around the campus. I come out sometimes at 3, sometimes at 4, and I walk around the campus. We have our private domain here where houses are not to be seen. We look from the meditation center and we look off across the valley and we see the twinkling lights of houses all over the valley. But here on the campus grounds, on the monastery grounds, are nothing but one or two lights from the various buildings. And then if you look very carefully in the dark night, you can see the night light in the citadel, and you can see the lights of the various other buildings that are hidden from view, but shining only when you are over there. But if you look carefully, they'll come out at you. The walk is sort of a great experience, because I like to say the affirmations, blessing the property, blessing the monastery, blessing the University of Healing, blessing the monks, blessing all of the people involved here. And then my mind goes to a new series of thinking. We've had the monastery as an active organization for many years, since 1975 and before. But basically, we've had it as an active organization where people came here and were monks and trained in being a monk. And most recently, we have decided to take a new look at what we're doing. And what we're really doing is we're not training monks to go out into the world and be a monk. We're training masters to go out in the world to be a master. And so we thought our successes with the School of the Master over many years that we've conducted that is always so enlightening and so rewarding that perhaps we should call our campus a School of the Master. Not just the University of Healing or University of Philosophy, Church of God Unlimited, the Absolute Monastery, what else do we call it?
Far Valley Ranch.
Far Valley Ranch, and all the other names that we give it, which are all true and realistic names. But as Ellen was walking the path this morning, she came upon two ladies who were on the outer road as Ellen was making a turn at one of our points in the walk. And these two ladies are normal, ordinary ladies that are neighbors, and we see them running and walking and doing things virtually every day. And they're very special ladies insofar as they are doing walks for good deeds, you might say. And they're walking for cancer or something like that. And people are making donations to be given to the society for working on this project. And as Ellen bumped into these two ladies, they said, "Oh, Ellen." And Ellen had kindly sent them a donation for their walk so they could add it to their required donation that they had to have to make the walk. And they said, "Ellen, how wonderful. Thank you, thank you, thank you," you know, and came running up to her and gave her a big hug. And of course, that's Ellen's forte, being hugged. So she hugged back, and they both hugged her and thanked her very much. And then Ellen said, "Well, you know, we don't teach going out and and giving money to organizations, giving money to projects like you're doing there. We're not opposed to it, but we are more interested in saying, I'm whole and perfect. And the lady says, what? Yes, we're more interested in saying I'm whole and perfect, because it's the thoughts that are in our head, it's the thoughts that are in our mind. And in a few moments, Ellen gave her a little resume or of what we do here at campus. And then they said, hey, that is really interesting. That is really interesting. That I can believe. And then the other lady said, I went onto your website and I saw what you have there. And it's really pretty nice. And then they talked for a while. And then as the ladies were leaving, they were quite a distance away. And one lady turned around, what's that phrase? And Ellen shouts out, I'm whole and perfect. I'm whole and perfect. I'm whole and perfect. Yes, I'll use that. Now, Ellen was making her morning walk, and she was doing her internal introspection work, and she was listening to the divine in her. And then all of a sudden, these two women came out of nowhere and came down our road, and she was very surprised to see them and delighted, although it is expected that they're out walking about that time of day. But here she is at 5 in the morning, giving or 6 in the morning, and giving a report on healing to wanderers walking around the campus, you know, people who she certainly had not expected to meet, and she had not expected would be so harmonious with what she had to share. But surely they did. And so the other day, too, we were sitting here at the breakfast table, and we had a phone call. And it was our neighbor, the Turners, is it, or Thomas's? Thomas's. And Ellen had spoken for Mr. Thomas, who we understood was ill, and she spoke her word that he was whole and perfect, and sent a lovely card. And the woman had mentioned that she didn't return the response to the card because her husband was terminal with this condition. And Helen says, there's nothing terminal. And the woman says, well, I'm living with it, you know. And we didn't have a chance to talk with her too much because she has to make the inroad if she wants it. We treat her husband every day that he's whole and perfect, for he's our neighbor. And then she said, I suppose you noticed the gate we put up. And we didn't put it up to inhibit you using that road, you know, having a right-of-way on that road. We put it up because there's so much traffic going through there. The kids with their three-wheelers and their motorcycles zip up that road and turn around, come down, and zip up and turn around, and come down. And they do. I hear them oftentimes in the evening. And the biggest objection, she says, is at the Border Patrol. They go zooming up the road and zooming down the road, and the road is only maybe about 50 yards from our house. And that's awfully close. And that noise bothers everyone in the family. So we put up that gate, not locking it, but just putting it up so that people could go through if they wished, but they'd have to stop and open the gate and go through. Now, I suppose this being the out west country, everybody knows the rule that if you open a gate, you close it immediately. You can go through it, but you close it. You don't leave the gate open because some cows might walk through. Some horses might walk out. Some whatever might come through the gate. And true, the gate has no fence on either side. It's just a gate in the road, but it's the principle of the gate, that when you open it, you close it. So she was very solicitous of the idea that we shouldn't take offense at it. And we said, oh, we are really appreciative of it because we like to slow the traffic down too. But when you take the 3-mile walk, you never know what's going to happen. Here it is, 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, and I run into the Border Patrol people occasionally as they're driving along. And I think to myself, here they are doing this wonderful work. I've spoken about this before. They're doing this wonderful work of guarding our borders so that only legal immigrants may come into the country. And they drive their cars and trucks with so much noise, and they talk between themselves with such loud voices that we hear them waking us from our sleep. And if they wake us from our sleep, imagine what they do to the international travelers who are coming through. They're forewarned to stay out of the way. So my conviction is that they really are not trying to stop the international travelers, but to warn them that they're around and to get out of the way. So why is this that we're creating this type of activity on this monastery ground here, on the School of the Master ground? Why are we creating that? Why are we creating this activity? I was thinking this morning as I was walking around, amnesia would be a wonderful thing. If you had amnesia, you wouldn't remember the past. You would just live in the present. You wouldn't remember anything. But amnesia is not the way to go, because amnesia is only you. Amnesia is not your world. If you're going to have amnesia, then you don't remember anything, and but everybody else does, and they think that you should too. And then they tell you everything. And then little by little, they load your mind up with all the stuff that you let go. However, if we recognize that we live in the now, and that all the past is no longer there, it is no longer consequent, it is out of our life. We don't want to say that as a word because it's negative, but we want to say we live in the now. And if I live in the now, and I see everyone in my world living in the now, then there's no otherness. There's no otherness. Now, where do you find otherness? You find otherness in the idea that there is a yesterday and that there is a tomorrow. You don't find otherness in today, because in today, in now, is only the now. And if we could live only in the now and say to ourselves, for instance, I am spiritually illumined. I am a spiritual master. I am spiritually whole. I am spiritually healed. Now, I've described the spiritually healed aspect a few times, and the spiritually healed aspect is that when you are spiritually healed, nobody, the doctors, your parents, the world, nobody knows that you were ever ill. Nobody knows that you ever had a condition that could be healed. Everybody remembers only that about you, of your wholeness. So now, if we could come to that point of view in our awareness, then we wouldn't need the amnesia. Then we would have living in the now, because there would be no past. There'd be no past. However, being spiritually healed of an illness does not mean that all of your way of living is changed. Your modus operandi remains the same. But what changes is that anything relative to what you consider the illness is not there. There's no doctor records, no hospital records, no family understanding of it, remembrance of it. And if it inhibited you in any way from being a superior being, then that is not there, and you are indeed a superior being. But we are a superior being regardless. We are a superior being because we speak our word and we live the divine in us. Now, everybody else lives the divine in them too. And if we ever see anyone in our world who is less than perfect, then that's what we create for ourselves, because that's an expression of ourself. That's an outpicturing of ourself. So when I walk the path in the morning, I say these beautiful, positive things. I say these healing words for myself and for everybody else. And I look at the plants and I say, you're glorious. And I have a vision, like our dear friend Martin Luther King. I have a vision. And that vision is that we live in the now. And in the now, right now, here, on this campus and its surroundings, is one gigantic redwood forest. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years old, maybe thousands. And it covers the hillsides here, and it covers this. And on this campus are three lovely little streams running through it with, you know, constant water. And the spring has constant water coming out of it. And it is just a beautiful, dynamic, wonderful place. And then an open area here where we can have our buildings or our activities. And then a beautiful, tall building, maybe 4, 5, 10 stories tall, in one corner, where all of the offices would be, and all of the classrooms would be, and all of the activities would be. And then that would be built out of stone, like a lovely stone building. And then there'd be small stone buildings around here, which would be the residences of the staff and of the people who are active here, the School of the Master program. And that the School of the Master would be known worldwide. And that we would have our beautiful paved road going out to the main highway. And we would have all of these beautiful activities taking places here. But it would be there, and it would be, nobody would ever remember that it wasn't there. And that is a beautiful thing. And then we could walk around and do our things. But you see, to arrive at that point, you have to arrive at the point in consciousness where you are your master, where you are the master of your thought. And someone else can create it for you, and you can participate in it, but you haven't had any experience in being the master. It's like we speak about the Atlanteans. At the time, they had great power in their word, in their thought, and they created the world exactly how they liked it. And if they liked to change it for a moment or for a lifetime, they did so, and no problem. And they did not know longevity. They were always living in the present, in their youthful present. And so somebody came along with a game idea and said, let us handle this for you like the scientists might do. And they said, oh, okay, that's an interesting point of view. So I'll just sit back and let you do everything. And they did that, and then shazam, it toppled. Just like Rome and other great nations and other great philosophies, they topple when you cease to apply them, when you cease to be the master of them. Well, these are thoughts that were entertaining my mind as I walked the morning path. And these are thoughts that one day you will not be surprised when it happens, because you won't remember that it wasn't so. You won't be surprised. And the world won't be surprised that there's a big redwood forest in Southern California, because that's my choice. No one will be surprised. You say, well, here you are telling everybody. You're telling everybody about this on this tape. No. Those who have ears will hear it, and the rest of the people will say, what a dumb idea. How idiotic. You know, how inane can you be, you know? And, hey, that's okay. Because there are people who say, how inane can you be, when they go to the doctor, and the doctor says, you're going to die in 2 weeks. And they say, no way, I am going to live. And then they put a totally different cause in motion in their life, and they live. Now, why did the doctor tell them they were going to die? Because what they were doing, and if they continue to do what they were doing, they'd die. But if they made a change in consciousness, which the doctor cannot predict, if they made a change in consciousness, they wouldn't die. And this is true for all of us. When we make a change in consciousness and we allow the impossible to be the normal, we have a magic life, a magic world, and a magic experience. Come walk this path, the 3-mile path around the campus here, early in the morning, and let the morning mist sort of settle on your shoulders as you are out there. Some days you have to wear something because it's a little chilly, and some days you don't. But you just get out there and be one with nature, be one with life, and be untouched by the chilliness, be untouched by the weather, be untouched by anything. Can you do that? Do you want to do that? If you do, walking the hills in the bright morning, and even not so bright, most of the time it's dark when I go out, and then as I walk along, my eyes become accustomed to the darkness, and I can see the path. And I don't look at the path. I look beyond the path, and the path is clearly visible. But this is the wonder of the morning walk. Everyone could have that great experience if they wanted to, and perhaps many will. But when we continually apply ourselves to the mundane activities of the world, we'll have the mundane activities, and they'll be great. But when we start applying ourselves to the divine activities within ourselves, we'll start having those. And then we'll say, oh, the miracles are happening. No, we won't, because we won't know it. Every time, if I were to say to you, do you remember way back when that such and such happened? And